This is Floss Weekly. I'm Doc Searles. This week, Jonathan Bennett and I have as a really great guest on. This is Amit Taylor of TrueUp. TrueUp does research on jobs, connecting supply and demand. He has the best thing we have seen for looking at the job market in open source. He used to be with AWS. Now he's on his own, and he's doing this thing. You have to look at it, trueup.io, and listen to this podcast. It's really great. Coming up next.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 679, recorded Wednesday, May 4th, 2022. Open jobs in open source. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Bitwarden. Get the password manager that offers a robust and cost-effective solution that can drastically increase your chances of staying safe online. Get started with a free trial of a Teams or Enterprise plan, or get started for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. And by Collide. That's Collide with a K. Get endpoint management that puts the user first. Visit collide.com/floss, that's KOLIDE.com/floss, to learn more and activate a free 14-day trial today, no credit card required. And by NetFoundry, reinvent the network and eliminate the WAN by decoupling security from infrastructure to protect our applications and data with open source zero trust. Grab your free swag and free tier now by going to netfoundry.io/twit. Hello again, and good whatever it is, whenever it is, wherever you are on Earth or elsewhere. I am Doc Searles. This is Floss Weekly, and I am joined this week as a co-host by Jonathan Bennett. There he is.
Hey,
your background looks different today.
Along with your facial hair.
Yeah, you've got a more sculpted goatee going on, it looks like.
Oh,
also.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah, the background may be a little different, too. Used the tripod to take some family pictures the other day, and so it's not quite in exactly the same place. So we have a different outlook on the office today.
That's cool. I have the same one. I'm in Santa Barbara, which is my main home, our permanent home, and with old radios and things in the background. And a camera over here that I just returned, a rented lens. It's the best lens I ever rented, and it costs so much. I'm not going to buy it, so it's too bad. But anyway, I'm in a bad mood about that. So our guest this morning is Amit Taylor of TrueUp. I know you're familiar with the job market, but you're familiar with his work or what we're going to talk about today?
No, not with Amit and not with TrueUp. It's fascinating to me. It seems like he's trying to kind of feel the pulse of jobs around open source, which is kind of important these days. You know, we've seen several projects in the past few months that have been hit with hacktivism, as we call it. And, you know, that's in one case, it was where a developer was, you know, he felt like he was developing this project and a bunch of big companies were using it and none of them were paying him any money for it. And he got frustrated and added some sort of malicious code in there. And so, it's an interesting topic, this one about, making money from open source and the ways to connect the people working on it with the companies that have the money. And, you know, if you can make that connection better, it would be good for all of us. And so I'm real curious to ask Amit about that today.
It's an eternal topic. It's kind of like Linux on the desktop or the Linux laptop. Yeah. You know, when is Linux going mainstream, even though Android ate the world? When is that going to happen? I have to say that he's not on yet. But he sent us, I think, one of the best prep documents I've ever seen. It's so good that I actually think, why don't we just put blanks in here for all future guests and let them just fill this thing out? Because he did just a great job of taking, you know, my kind of boilerplate guidance and turned it into a real prep document. So hats off to that. But first, I have to let everybody know, we want to jump into that, that today's episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Bitwarden. Bitwarden is the only open source cross-platform password manager that could be used at home, at work, or on the go, and is trusted by millions. With Bitwarden, you can securely store credentials across personal and business worlds. Every Bitwarden account begins with the creation of a personal vault. Bitwarden just added their username generator to the password generator in the web vault, desktop app, and browser extensions, and coming soon in their mobile app, a feature that has been highly requested from the community. The new username generator makes it easy to create a random username, adding an extra level of security and privacy to your logins. Having a different username for each website you use makes it difficult or impossible for hackers to cross-reference lists of leaked data and find useful information about an individual. The generator allows for creating a plus addressed email for email providers that support that feature, a catch-all email address, or a simple random word. Plus addressing provides extra options for mailbox management and may also reveal any services that have sold email addresses to third parties. Other options include a generated email address at a specific domain for a catch-all email account, or a simple random word and number to be used as a non-email username. Bitwarden is a must-need for your business. It's fully customizable and adapts to your business needs. Use Bitwarden Send, a fully encrypted method to transmit sensitive information, whether text or files, generate unique and secure passwords for every site with enterprise-grade security that's GDPR, CCPA, HIPAA, and SOC 2 compliant. Their end-to-end encrypted vault helps mitigate phishing attacks. Their team organization option is $3 a month per user. Share private data securely with coworkers, department, or entire organization. Enterprises can use Bitwarden's enterprise organization plan for just $5 a month per user. Individuals can use their basic free account forever for an unlimited number of passwords, or upgrade anytime to their premium account for less than $1 a month. Their family organization option gives up to 6 users premium features for only $3.33 a month. At Twit, we're fans of password managers. Bitwarden is the only open source cross-platform password manager that can be used at home, on the go, or at work, and is trusted by millions of individuals, teams, and organizations worldwide. Get started with a free trial of a Teams or enterprise plan, or get started for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. That's bitwarden.com/twit. Okay, our guest this morning is Amit Taylor of TrueUp. He's the founder of the company, and it's a data-driven career platform for people working on tech. He collects data from 5,000 top tech companies, including almost 500,000 open tech jobs. Before that, he spent 5 years as the leading product management and design for startup customers at Amazon's Web Services, AWS, and he's worked in product management, all kinds of stuff. I don't want to go on too long about that because I'd rather have him on the show. So good morning, or whatever it is, wherever you are there, Amit.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah. Where are you located?
To be here.
Yeah, besides a kind of blank-looking room.
Yeah, I try to make things look as vague as possible, but I am in Las Vegas, Nevada today.
Oh, wonderful.
Wow.
Wonderful. my Las Vegas story is that when I was driving into town once with my teenage son coming back from camping, and it's dark, and he sees the lights of the city after seeing nothing but desert, and he says, "Oh, my God, think of all the money people have won here." And I said, "Dude, everything you see was paid for by losers." And then he says, he was too young. He said, I want you to just put one quarter into one slot machine and let's see what happens. I put a quarter in and I got three out. So we left at a profit. So
that's great. So, yeah, I've mixed thoughts on Las Vegas, but I don't think that's the topic of our podcast.
So tell us about, you know, your journey here. How'd you get to starting this business from AWS? There must be a connection there.
Sure. Yeah, there definitely is a connection, although kind of started this business for a few different reasons. All of them kind of center around just I thought it would be interesting to start aggregating this. But I'd say the AWS story in particular, and just maybe some background there, Amazon Web Services, I'm sure a lot of the people listening are familiar with AWS or have used it before. While I was there, I focused on startups building on AWS and ended up running a bunch of different product initiatives there of both like making AWS easier for startups to use, launching new products to help startups build on AWS, and then even these other programs like giving out credits to startups to make it more financially viable for them to start building their infrastructure on AWS and validate different business models. And AWS is the leading cloud provider, at least in terms of number of customers and revenue. So the customer sizes were quite large. Most startups are building on AWS. And so it was very, very, very interesting and a great time there. Was there for five years. But there were some things there that kind of triggered some of the work that I've done here. And one of them was, I'd say, like the reputation of AWS in the open source community, which was kind of a controversial topic that I think was a little bit under-discussed internally at AWS. And so there were some reasons there that kind of led me to want to collect some of this data where people would say AWS is a great open source citizen. Other people would, you know, customers sometimes would come to us, startups would say, you know, we don't really agree with how AWS has acted in the open source arena, and that's a reason that we're not so excited about using AWS as our cloud infrastructure provider. But there wasn't, it would kind of just be like this people shouting past each other. And so part of this was this, I think there's a lot of interesting, useful data out there for people in tech. It's not aggregated in one place. And I thought I could try to start aggregating it and maybe distill some interesting insights from that. And it's not just the open source data. There's things like diversity data in tech, where a lot of companies now publish their diversity data, and people will say, we are good at diversity, we're not good at diversity, but there's no kind of central repository where all this data is stored, compared, ranked. And so I'm kind of a data person. I like aggregating data, and then I like doing analysis on top of it. And so, yeah, stuff like that are the reasons why I started building TrueUp this past year. And it's a little bit more of a project still, rather than a business at the moment. I do have some business models to it, but I think of it more as a project, and I just try to do whatever I think is interesting or is going to be fun to build. That's kind of the way I've been building the roadmap for this so far.
Hey, Amit, good to talk to you today. You mentioned some of the customers of AWS kind of having a dim view of their open source approach to things. I'm curious, is this related to like the problems that led to the Commons Clause license edition and some of those things?
Yeah, well, so we're going to get into maybe some a little bit controversial topics here probably today. Sure. With stuff like that where people have very strong opinions and a lot of them are more informed than I am. Like, I'm not an expert on that topic. So I think I can kind of report on what people feel, and it's less my opinion here. But yeah, I think there's a couple things at play there. I think there are these quote-unquote like open source companies that have built these products. Their founders are often the creators of the projects, feeling like they're not able to compete well in the marketplace, and that AWS, because of the network effects of kind of, you know, once you start using one service, it probably makes sense to use other services there, that they've created a lot of these things, but then AWS ends up profiting significantly from them, and in some cases makes it hard for those companies to be viable. Although also, like, a lot of those companies have done very well. Like, I think it's there's so much money at play here in the cloud infrastructure world that AWS can be very successful, and a lot of these other open source companies have been very successful as well. But I think that's one part of the perception that some people have. And I should say, this is the minority of people. I think the majority of people building on AWS don't care. But there are definitely people who do care about this and are very passionate about it. And I think the other piece is the fact that AWS is a huge company, and Amazon is an even bigger company. And they haven't contributed, or at least like created as much open source projects that, given their size, that would kind of seem to make sense. And maybe some other companies have. So like a Google has many projects that I could rattle off that have been very impactful, whether it's TensorFlow, Kubernetes, and even like a Facebook has a lot of very impactful open source projects, and they're not even a cloud computing offering. And so AWS is the leading cloud computing offering, and they are not the leading creator of important open source projects. And so I think that combination is where that perception comes from.
Okay, that's good. So now, talking about TrueUp, I'm trying to understand the connection between these. What's the data set that TrueUp is kind of tracking, and how does that connect back to AWS and how people feel about it?
It does. I mean, this is not for how people feel about AWS. That was more of just like a trigger. I think there's a lot of data out there, and so I started just pulling every data source I could find. This is not just open source based either. TrueUp is for tech more broadly. I think open source is one of many interesting niches that people are very passionate about. And I think maybe the most important thing I want to talk about on this podcast is just the opportunity that exists out there is incredible at this point in terms of jobs. And I think everyone's kind of aware of that, that jobs have been increasing in tech, and that there's people will say kind of it's a talent market at the moment. But I think it's hard to wrap your head around just how true that is at the moment. And so I track 11,000 open source jobs at the moment. And we could talk about how I define that and how I measure that. But that's a 475,000 tech jobs that are all on the site. You can search them and filter them through all sorts of different filters. And every single one of those jobs is at a top tech company. And so there's sites like LinkedIn that have like 12 million jobs on them, but a lot of them are not kind of a great fit for someone who's very passionate about tech. There's a lot of noise there. There's job boards, like there's open source job boards that I've seen that have 100 jobs or something. And this is kind of an effort to build what I think is the right thing in between of all of the really interesting jobs, but none of kind of the noise for people who are very passionate about tech. And so the job data that I have is the main set of data on the site, and that's kind of the main use case. But I've layered on this metadata for companies as well. And so the open source contribution citizenship data. So if you care a lot about open source, I can provide you a lot of data there to help you figure out which of these companies you would want to work for. If you don't care about open source at all, that's fine. And you can maybe look at the diversity data if that's more important to you. Or you can, for every company I have, like the top hacker news posts on those companies. So if that's, you want to know what the discussion is around these companies in the engineering community, that could be something that you look at.
I was just going to ask, you've got this kind of wide, sounds like a wide source of data that you're pulling together. Where does most of this come from? Are you scraping, various job sites? Do you have a list of companies that you just go and scrape data off of them? How did that collection of data come about? It sounds like there's a story there.
Yeah, a lot of time, I guess, of just looking into this. Like, I am just very interested in tech. I think it kind of started at first where I was thinking about what I wanted to do for my next job. And I was like, you know, there's so much opportunity out there. I don't even know where to start at this point. And I do like to optimize things. So I did start kind of trying to like make some spreadsheets probably. And then I realized like there's just way more companies and opportunities out there than like I knew there was a ton, but there's an order of magnitude more than that. And so started looking into what the data sources are that are available. But to answer your question specifically, some of it's partnerships that I have with different SaaS providers that these companies use for their job boards. Some of it is web scraping. Some of it is APIs like the Reddit API, GitHub API. So it's really a combination of all those things. I will scrape the data if I can't find a more reliable way, but prefer to do the API route and kind of have a better relationship with whoever the data source is. But haven't gotten in too much trouble yet, and don't think I'm doing anything. It's all publicly available data. But it is all data that I had just never seen in one place, and it was really like, this is the product that I want as someone who's very interested in tech and wants to kind of have access to all this stuff easily. And so I just kind of started building it for me with the hope that it would resonate with some other people out there. And one thing I've learned about the internet is that there's a lot more people in these niches than you would think. And that's definitely been the case with TrueUp so far. Have about 10,000 people a month coming to the site. It's new, and a lot of reactions of I've never seen anything like this before. And coming from people all over the spectrum, whether you're really interested in open source, really interested in crypto and Web3, but any of 80 or 90 different niches that exist within the larger tech ecosystem.
Yeah, that's great. I'll throw in here, I have some pretty strong feelings about scraping. I think it's pretty much just letting a computer read a website, which is pretty obviously an okay thing to do. And I think it's a little ridiculous when companies get all bent out of shape over someone scraping their website. But anyway, that's kind of beside the point.
We can talk about that too. It's definitely fun too. It's a fun little challenge too. And it's always kind of a little battle. Like a company will change their website slightly and you can see certain companies are very aware that people are trying to scrape their websites, and so they're doing all sorts of little tricks and stuff. So it kind of becomes this video game.
Yeah, it's kind of silly. Anyway, so I'm reminded, I mentioned this in kind of the pre-show, but I'm reminded of the story of Merrick and the colors and faker.js repositories that he built, and then he added some code that right on the border of being malicious, doing some things it wasn't supposed to do. And he has a GitHub issue that he opened himself, and he says, respectfully, I am no longer going to support Fortune 500s and other smaller size companies with my free work. There isn't much else to say. Take this as an opportunity to either send me a six-figure yearly contract or fork the project and have someone else work on it. And of course, I wrote about this on the Hackaday Security column. But I'm thinking that a project like TrueUp might be a solution for developers that feel like they're in kind of stuck in this situation. You know, I've been working on this and a bunch of people are using it and nobody's paying me anything. Well, it seems like you could just say, all right, what are the 10 biggest companies that are using my project? All right, let's go check them out on TrueUp and find out what job openings they have. And you could probably find work and support that way, I would think. Is that something you've seen people do? Is that kind of one of the things that you're trying to help people with?
Yeah, I mean, I am trying to help people if they are interested. I'm not telling anyone that they should be excited about open source or passionate about it. I personally feel that way, but I don't want to project that onto anyone else. But I want to make people realize that you can have a very vibrant and successful and lucrative career in open source, and that there's a lot of options to do that. You can go work at all the, again, like if I had asked most people, like, how many open source jobs do you think are open right now for you? I don't think many people would have guessed 11,000. And you 11,000. And you can go to the website right now. So it's trueup.io/open source with a dash between the open and source. And you can view every single one of those jobs and see that they're all really interesting jobs. So there's so much opportunity there. There's also startups. As you know, you can potentially fund a lot of these as business models. And I think that's controversial somewhat too. I know open source has a long history that I haven't really been a part of. And I know talking about business models can be a little bit controversial. But there's a ton of opportunity there and a ton going on there where I track a lot of these open source startups. And so I have 218 companies that I consider open source companies on TrueUp. And I think there's a lot more like very early stage project companies, and it'd be cool to even talk about a few of them. And but I think that is a big change in open source world of how many companies there are being started with these open source business models. And then just for that specific example you're talking about, obviously that's a big problem. There are some interesting startups that I've come across. One is this company, Scarf, that helps open source maintainers keep better track of who's using their open source project. With the idea that I think that would definitely make it easier for you to, as the maintainer of a project, to know kind of who to be talking to and who to be looking for support from, and donations. But I think, you know, you do have the ability to take control of your own destiny if you're willing to go down one of these more business model routes that are very popular now for a lot of startups, but it's not maybe aligned 100% with the traditional ethos of open source.
Wow. Yeah, you're not looking at our back channel here, but Jonathan and I are exchanging all kinds of thoughts for questions. And we're not going to have time for all of them, but first I have to take time to let, before I get to my next question, to let everybody know that this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Collide. That's Collide with a K. Collide is a new take on endpoint management that asks the question, how can we get end users more involved? This is in contrast to old-school device management tools like MDM, which lock down your employees' devices without considering their needs or even attempting to educate them about the security of their laptop. Collide is built by like-minded security practitioners who in the past saw just how much MDM was disrupting their end users, often frustrating them so bad that they'd throw their hands up and just switch to using their own personal laptops without telling anybody. In that scenario, everyone loses. Collide, on the other hand, is different. Instead of locking down a device, Collide takes a user-focused approach that communicates security recommendations to your employees directly on Slack. After Collide is set up, device security turns from a black and white state into a dynamic conversation. This conversation starts with the end users installing the endpoint agent on their own through a guided process that happens right inside their first Slack message. From there, Collide regularly sends employees recommendations when their device is in an insecure state. This can range from simple problems like the screen lock not being set correctly to hard to solve and nuanced issues like asking people to secure two-factor backup codes sitting in their downloads folder properly. And because it's talking directly to employees, Collide is educating them about the company's policies and how to best keep their devices secure using real, tangible examples, not theoretical scenarios. Collide, cross-platform endpoint management for Linux, Mac, and Windows devices that puts end users first for teams that Slack. Get endpoint management that puts the user first. Visit collide.com/floss to learn more and activate a free 14-day trial today. No credit card required. Visit KOLIDE.com/floss today. And right now, you can get a goodie bag of Collide swag after signing up for a new trial as their way of saying thank you. So, Amit, I have to say I'm excited looking at TrueUp, and I have two questions here, and one I hope you can answer simply and easily. You seem like a pretty small operation so far. This is a really well done website. Did you do that all yourself? Did you have help? The second thing is, and it's kind of related to the first, that this is like a dashboard for anybody hiring or anybody wanting to look at jobs. I was an editor at Linux Journal for almost a quarter century, and we were always hungry for data, and I think that's what got us to you in the first place. It's like, look at all the cool stuff that's here. You've got unicorns with some, you know, with ratings for these guys and so forth. There's a lot going on there. So I'm just wondering if you could kind of address both those questions, because I think you could easily explode here. I mean, this could easily become something large. I know the Craigslist story. I mean, Craig Newmark just started doing Craigslist for his neighborhood, you know, and ended up with like a billionaire, you know. So there's a path here. You could be a unicorn.
Yeah, that would be nice. To answer your first question, it is just me working on this is probably the wrong answer. Factually, I think, what you're looking for. But I think the reality is probably really the thing about open source. I've built all of this on top of open source tech, and that's what's given me the leverage to build this site, whether it's building the front end in React or some of the web scraping technology that's out there in open source. Like, I could never build those things, but it's, you know, it's not super easy. I do have to read the documentation a bunch of times to know how to actually use it. But just the leverage that you have because of open source technology is incredible. It almost seems not fair to me that it's so easy for me. Like, I as one person can do all of this. And what have I given to the open source community, for example? Like, not a lot yet, but I would like to do more. And one is maybe helping people get into open source and just helping people realize, like, you can have a career as a developer relations person who just focuses on databases, who wants to live in the plains of South Dakota. You can do all those things and still have a really great career and still not be locked into one specific company. Like, you could do that as a career now and change companies every couple years and get paid a very competitive amount. And I just don't think that was true in the past. So that's my service back to open source. I'm sorry, what was the second question? I'm forgetting now.
You're kind of covering them both. I think this might lead into the second question was about, which is actually the change in the landscape and what your opportunities are in the long run as a growing thing, because I think you will grow. I've always thought that open source, like, construction is really well understood as a business, as a broad, it's probably the biggest business in the world in overall, people building stuff, right? And an awful lot of construction material is open source. You know, it's not hard to make a brick. It's not hard to grow a tree. And that stuff is essentially open to begin with. It's available. And what the difference with open source is that a periodic table of infinite width and height, you can build out in all kinds of directions. We don't understand it yet. You know, we don't understand it well enough yet, but there is a construction business here. And you've got a view into it. You may have the biggest and best view into open source as a construction business. That's actually not a business in many cases. A lot of construction is just people building stuff that it's barn raising. If somebody knows how to build a barn, they get together with some other people, they build a barn. You know, maybe, you know, the materials may cost something. With open source, the materials cost nothing. But that's beside the point. You make money because of what you built, not with the building materials themselves. But it seems to me as things mature here, where we have a better understanding of how open source actually works, that to me is like, you know, having that dashboard on this field is really cool and interesting. I mean, I could easily imagine, I don't mean to hog the floor here, companies saying, hell with it, we're not going to make it hard to scrape this. Let's just scrape away, you know? The data is good, you know? We need it.
Yeah, I think that is the case, and no one's asked me to not scrape this data or anything. I do think, so one thing I do on this site is I try to be very kind of transparent and honest about things. Like my main goal in this is serving people working in tech less so than the companies themselves. And so I try to build the site that I would want as a job seeker, and that I am a job seeker in theory, or I probably will be again at some point. And so I try to be very transparent and honest about things. And a lot of this stuff is not what people are proud of, or is not what people feature on their site. One example is just the description of companies, where if you go to someone's LinkedIn profile, they'll say, we are the data exploration, or I don't know what these terms are. I can't even come up with them on the fly, but just these ridiculous things. Like, we are a digital innovation company. And it's like, no, you're a database company also. Like, maybe you also think of yourself as the digital innovation leader for the next generation, but you're also an open source graph database. And so I try to kind of present things throughout the site more as just as they are, and matter of fact, and less of the recruiter speak. And so I think some companies are a little bit uneasy with that. But I think a profile on TrueUp is a lot more interesting and useful than a profile on LinkedIn that tends to have more of that recruiter speak, and then maybe like a stock photography photo of a bunch of people working who don't even actually work at the company. Trying not to do that. But I do think there's a lot of opportunity here. Obviously, hiring is a really big need for a lot of companies. If anyone in the open source world is hiring, please reach out to me if you want some help with that. We do have a lot of users of TrueUp, and I'm trying to do a good job of connecting companies with people who are interested in working in open source. But again, I'm trying to do it in a way that is really in the best interest of the people looking for jobs. And so that's meant not going super fast, being pretty selective about the companies and opportunities that I've partnered with here so far. But there's a huge need, I think, on both ends. There's way, and I think I've almost created a problem here a little bit, where I've showing people just how much like there's 475,000 really, or like you could go into a niche role of like legal roles in open source. There's hundreds of those that are open right now. And so it almost becomes a little bit overwhelming of, oh, like, how do I decide? How do I pick which of these to go work for? Or how do I kind of process all the opportunity? And so I think there's a big opportunity to do a better job there that I'd like to pursue.
Amit, I want to explore some more of this, and I want to start with this question. How do we define, how do you define on the site, what is an open source job? Like, is this have to be someone that's writing code for an open source project? Or does this include people, you know, working on sysadmin for open source projects? Like, what all is included in that, and how did you draw that line?
Yep, that's a great question, and something I'm still kind of adjusting as I go here. And I've been getting so much great feedback on Twitter and other places, and have been making changes every day. That's another cool thing about being a one-person project, is that whenever I feel like changing something, I can just get it changed, as opposed to, remember, working in big tech, there'd be a one-year planning process, and then could actually get our stuff done. But so the definition I've been using right now is something I've borrowed from Joseph Jacks at OSS Capital, which is a VC firm focused on open source. And it's companies that would, or it's jobs at companies, but it's really, I guess I'm going to give you the definition of what an open source company is, which is companies that would not exist without a specific open source technology. So in some sense, every tech job is open source because every tech company depends on open source at this point. But this definition is more narrow, where it's a specific open source project or technology is at the core of that company. And so some of the biggest companies, kind of examples of that are Databricks, MongoDB, Confluent, GitLab, HashiCorp, Elastic, Automatic, where you guys had Matt, I saw on the podcast recently. So Automatic is the company behind WordPress. So companies like that. So any job at one of those companies, I consider to be an open source job. And so it's definitely not just engineering jobs. There's so many other jobs out there now. Again, whether it's marketing, community manager is a really big job within open source. Sales, a lot of these companies have very serious sales and enterprise sales arms and all the things that go around sales, whether that's sales operations, sales engineering. And then I do also include open source jobs as I can kind of, I've built different models to try to flag them at larger companies that aren't open source companies necessarily. So I think I just saw recently there's like a vice president of open source at VMware. And so that job gets included in this. Obviously, if it says open source in the job title, my models can flag that and grab that. Some of the other kind of NLP, natural language processing stuff I do, I'm still working on. So I'd say it's mainly jobs at companies that are defined as open source, again, by this definition, and then some other jobs at other companies that seem to be very focused on open source. But obviously, every engineering job at this point is going to touch open source. So it's not every engineering job. And one other thing I should point out, which maybe is kind of an interesting thing to talk about, is crypto and Web3. And I generally have not included those in this open source job report that I published or in the open source landing page on TrueUp. I have a separate page and profiles for crypto and Web3, but they actually technically do meet this definition of mostly being built on a single kind of open source technology. So that might be something interesting to talk about is kind of crypto versus open source. And
yeah, it seems like for now, at least, those are two separate things in a meaningful way. So I'm curious, I'm kind of thinking through what you're doing here and trying to imagine how this could be a really neat experience. So if someone says, hey, I'm a developer and I want to write code for, let's say, Nginx. I really care about the Nginx. Maybe I've done some hobby level work on it. I want a job where I can actually write code that gets pushed into the Nginx project. Is there a way that we can go to TrueUp and type in that as a query and then get, okay, this company is hiring an engineer that will actually do Nginx work? Is that something that you're at, or is that something you're hoping to implement?
That specifically might be a little bit tricky still. I think just because I don't think Nginx is one of the tech. I have like 100 different technologies that I look for in each job posting that you can search for, and I don't recall, although it might be, Nginx being one of them. But for example, Kubernetes would obviously be like a very popular technology, and you can do that. You can go to this open source job board. Again, 11,000 jobs there. And there is, if you scroll all the way down, there's technologies and tools, and you can select the technology and tool if I support that. And again, please reach out to me on Twitter. DMs are open there if I'm missing anything that you think would be interesting to track. But yeah, that seems very that is very, very doable now. I'd like to do a better job of right now. When you sign up for the site, I send you the new job postings every week that are being posted by these companies that fit what you're interested in. I don't allow you to select the technology that you're interested in and get those emails. So there's some stuff on kind of the email alerts and things that I'd like to tweak. But again, I'm very open to feedback, and I think I've tried to be very open to feedback on people who have been using the site so far. So, I mean, that sounds like a great idea and something I've noticed that some people don't think in that way at all. A lot of people do, and I've had open source engineers reach out to me saying, the site is way better than anything else, but like it's still not quite there because I am a Rust developer, and like I don't want to see anything that's not open source Rust development related.
And trying to pick
and so
through
I'm
the
almost there for certain people, but again, yeah. Trying to build this fast, and if anyone wants to give me ideas for what they're looking for, I would love to hear that.
Yeah, it seems like trying to pick through the jobs, the corporate speak that's attached to these different jobs, and distill that down to, okay, this is an actual engineering job, and this is what it's working on doing. It seems like that might be the hardest piece of the puzzle, the hardest problem to solve here.
It definitely is. Even just these job titles, like what these things mean, and then every once in a while there'll be a ninja role or something, and it's just like, I have no idea what this is looking for. Is this like an evangelist? And there's just all these new roles that keep kind of coming up, at least as far as I can tell. Like I think I have almost 50 different roles that I kind of classify things into in tech. And every day there's like a new person being like, I am a research scientist. And like, where do I fall in your categorization? So that's an issue. Yeah. The corporate speak, again, I'm trying to cut through that just in general of it's mm-hmm. So if you look at, I don't know if you guys have this site open, but like, if you look at, each of these job postings, I have a short description of what the company does, in where I've actually gone through and like looked at every one of these companies and tried to give them a very short overview of like what I actually think the company does. So like Databricks, I have as a data and analytics platform. Whereas if you go to their site, like who knows what they're going to have on their homepage. Pachyderm, I have here, it's open source data science platform. So just trying to cut through that corporate speak, I think, is definitely tricky, but it's also like a big opportunity to help people, and again, to earn trust with people who are looking for jobs. And that's, again, I see you guys are pulling the site up here, like showing things that companies aren't going to talk about otherwise. So like the layoff history of a company. So you have Confluent up here, and they haven't had layoffs as far as I'm aware. And so great, but plenty of companies have. And so that's not data that anyone's featuring on their job page the last time they had a layoff. Just trying to be very transparent and honest and help people make decisions. Because I think when you have thousands and thousands of opportunities, you don't really have time to dive into like what is actually going on. Is this really an interesting company? Is this a startup? Has this company been around for 25 years? Are they actually remote friendly, or am I going to have to yell at people to add a Zoom link to every meeting still? And try to be clear about that, even like Glassdoor data, things like that.
It almost sounds like you need to define a limited vocabulary. Here's your 500 words you can use to describe your company and the job that you're looking for. And if we could get everyone to agree on this vocabulary, then we could just cut through the rest of the corporate noise, right?
I think so. I'm sure there's probably some GPT-3 model I can build that translates company websites to something that actually makes sense to most people besides marketers. But yeah, I think it would be cool to like let companies kind of speak to on the site longer term, but maybe put it in like a very distinctly colored box of this is information that's coming directly from the company. And I also like, I can maybe seem a little bit like I'm trying to point out or these issues that companies have. Like I personally love tech. And I love working in tech. I loved working at Amazon, for example. If you go to their page here, are you going to see layoffs? Are you going to see the fact that their Glassdoor ratings are not great? Are you going to see maybe that their open source contributions here, as I would define them, are not great? Yes, all those things are true. I still had a great time working there. I would be willing to go back there and work there again. But I think it's important to be open around, like, none of these companies are perfect, but tech is a very cool thing. It's really, I think, it's improved people's lives a ton. It's going to improve people's lives a lot more there's so much going on that I think almost anyone can find something they're passionate about, whether it's nuclear fusion or open source tech or crypto and Web3 or cloud computing. And so I don't also want, to make sure it doesn't come across as me pointing out, you know, the bad things about these companies. Just like, I just want to give everyone all the information, and then you should decide what you care about, what you're passionate about. But you shouldn't feel like you have to compromise too much, I guess, either, because there's so much opportunity out there that if you don't like a company for a certain reason, like, go to one of the other thousands of other very interesting companies that will probably pay you a competitive amount at this point. Like, there's not, I think it used to be, if you want to make a lot of money, you have to go work for five or six companies, and now there's 1,000, or there's over 1,000 private companies that are worth more than $1 billion that all will pay you a very good wage, I think.
Boy, there's so much to talk about here. I have a question, but first I have to let everybody know that this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by NetFoundry. Networking has traditionally been handled by dedicated teams and personnel. You could say network security has been deemed too important to leave in the hands of developers. One of our sponsors, NetFoundry, believes differently. Secure connectivity is too important to be taken away from developers and has forced dependency and stifled innovation and business velocity or unnecessary trades off security for those benefits. Therefore, NetFoundry created and maintains OpenZD, providing an open source, free, an easy way for the world to embed zero-trust networking into anything. It provides everything you need to spin up a truly private zero-trust overlay network in minutes across anything directly in your app, on any device, or in any cloud, built on principles of extensibility, flexibility, and scalability. Attacks from insecure networks can become a thing of the past. External network attacks, including DDoS attacks, brute force, credential stuffing, CVE, or zero-day exploits, BGP, hijacks, phishing, and more can be stopped. This is truly zero trust for all networks. No need for expensive and risky reactive patching. Agnostic design patterns ensure you only need commodity internet with outbound ports without needing network engineering skills to implement it. Say goodbye to complex firewall rules, inbound ports, public DNS, static network access controls, and VPNs. Spring for Shell and Windows RPC RCE are recent exploits / CVEs. The recommendation is to cloud import ports, but OpenZD allows you to have no inbound ports at all. OpenZD was mentioned in Java Magazine about how they Zdified the springboard for any Java app. Moral of the story, those who make themselves dark cannot be exploited by Spring for Shell or other network attacks. Eliminate the tug of war between developers and security. The former can work programmatically with software, while the latter have isolated apps driven by policy, visibility, and logs they require. Zero trust is a journey, so start wherever you need based on your priorities. OpenZD offers numerous SDKs, tunneling apps for popular OSs, and edge routers in cloud marketplaces. If you don't want to host OpenZD, use the NetFoundry SaaS, including free forever tiers for up to 10 endpoints. Head to netfoundry.io/twit to grab some free swag, learn more, and get started. That's netfoundry.io/twit, and get your free swag and free tier now. Okay, we're down. Boy, we're really in the really short rows at the end of the show. And it strikes me that what you've got there, Amit, is kind of this is a really old school instrument, but, you know, back when recording heads mattered, you would degauss things. You'd run a degaussing thing over it. And it seems that you've got kind of a degaussing instrument for corporate BS around hiring here. I mean, I have two relatives who are in the recruitment and hiring business, and I want to show this to them as a possible resource for them, or just as a way to approach having companies get real with people. You've got a huge market here for people, you know, and matching talent with companies. And And in open source, especially open source, is you can't have open source with any BS in it at all. That's not code. Does code needs to not have that. The open source movement, I think, is largely based on the antipathy people have as developers for BSing each other. You know, you can't put crap in there. You're always wanting to debug it, and you've got a debugging operation going on here for the hiring business, it seems to me.
I think that's absolutely what I'm trying to do, and I think it's just a problem that has probably always been there to some degree, but again, with the amount of opportunity right now, I think often people just kind of almost panic a little bit with the job, with like their career management, where they like, I have no idea how to process all this stuff, and I go to websites and LinkedIn profiles and LinkedIn, and it's just like an interview with an intern who's probably getting paid to like answer questions that this has been the best experience of their life. And you're just like, how do I do this? And so you kind of just wait for like a recruiter, like a random recruiter to reach out to you on LinkedIn and bother you. And then eventually you kind of respond to one of them and they're pinging you about healthcare technology companies, even though you work in cloud infrastructure. And it just kind of just doesn't feel right to me, especially, but also like, I can totally empathize with most people. Most people are not going to do what I've done, which is spent months and months of aggregating all of this data and reading everything they can find. You know, that's probably too extreme to expect of anyone also. And so, yeah, that's exactly my goal, is kind of getting people to realize how much opportunity there is out there, and then helping them navigate that in a way. And if, again, going to companies' hiring pages to me tends to not give me the signal or data that I need to make a decision. And I'm very, very, very aware of what's going on in a lot of different parts of tech. You know, a lot of people have things that they do outside of tech. And so they don't know everything about all these companies. And so it's really hard to make a decision at the moment. Which is but it's also a great, incredible time. It's a time of abundance, I guess you could say, of tech opportunities, if you have, you know, the skill sets that these companies are looking for. And so that's a whole other topic of how do we get more people to get in the position where they are qualified for a lot of these jobs. But there's just so much opportunity out there. It's so cool. But how do we give people the tools to deal with that and really empower them to take full advantage of how much opportunity there is out there?
Hey, Amit, I've got to ask, and I know you touched on this earlier, but I'm curious about your sustainability here. Seems like this is a great project for both businesses and people looking for jobs. How do you make this sustainable? Like, how do you make money from it to be able to pay your hosting costs and to live off of? And how do you make money from it without, you know, your funding model killing the thing that makes it magic and work to start with?
Yeah, that's a great question and something I'm still trying to figure out here.
Yeah.
There's a few aspects of it. One is, you know, I spent a bunch of time at AWS and I'm very good at being efficient with infrastructure. And that's another kind of magical thing of, you know, again, you can have debates about AWS and open source, but AWS has allowed, you know, individual developers to be incredibly productive. And so even with all the users I have and all this data, my infrastructure costs are almost nothing at the moment. I think the way to keep it sustainable for me so far has just been like I need to just be excited about it. And like, I am really excited about doing it. And I almost can't imagine like not continuing to work on it. And so it would be great to figure out a business model that works, but I'm not willing to pick a business model that compromises kind of the main mission that I have, or the most important thing, which is, again, earning trust and doing the right thing for tech talent and empowering them. So hopefully I can find a business model that works well for that and allows it to keep growing. If I can't, I'm willing to go back and get a job. And, you know, I think I'd still like to keep working on this and keep it going. A lot of it's automated at this point. So there is an autopilot version of this, but, You know, a lot of the work's been done already, but there's a lot more that I'd like to do here. And so I don't think that's going to be the path, but it definitely is a risk. And I think that's a risk with a lot of, I mean, it kind of mirrors the risk of a lot of open source projects too, of what happens if, you know, people have to move on with their lives. And I do think, again, business models are a great solution to that. If you can build a business model around something, it, even though, you know, it's a business model and now you're doing things to make money, and maybe that leads you to, or kind of, what would be the right word, kind of pushes you towards doing things that are against the original ethos that you had when you were trying to make this thing. I also think you have to be careful with that stuff. And that's why I haven't been that quick to raise money for this. Cause I know as soon as you raise venture capital money, then you do have this pressure to really figure out the business model and scale it as soon as possible. And I want to both find a business model that works, but also one that, is something that I'm comfortable with and that I think is aligned with this business, and that doesn't just make it into another LinkedIn where companies can pay me to then put their corporate speak here. And so, yeah, but still trying to explore all that and open to any ideas and collaborations. Again, my Twitter DMs are open.
Fantastic. We are pretty much out of time at this point. And on the back channel, I was saying we have to have him back in 6 months. Yeah, that's true. I think of the scale of this. I mean, I remember talking to Werner Vogels, who invented AWS when he was still just a researcher at Cornell. You know, he had this idea, and that became AWS. And, you know, there's just so much possibility here. I really think we're early in wherever this goes. So because we're really down at the end of the show, we usually have a series of final questions we ask, but I think I'll just go with our main two, which are, what are your favorite text editor and scripting language?
Yeah, I could tell that this question was coming, so I'm prepared. But Visual Studio Code is kind of pretty popular these days. It's an open source project, which is on the site, and then scripting language, mostly just JavaScript. It just is easy for me to be able to do everything in one language, not kind of have to switch. I do sometimes, you know, I run into these bugs and I'll try to get friends to help me out, and they'll tell me it's way easier to just do this in Python or something, and you wouldn't have these issues. And it's like, yeah, but the script works, so let's just keep it in JavaScript.
Well, that's great. Well, listen, thank you so much. There are so many questions we've left unasked, and you've left unanswered. So we probably will have to have you back in 6 months. So, I think
I'd love to come back. And it's such a honor, honestly, to be on this podcast. You know, it's hard to even, like, I know a lot of the people you've had on here are really incredible people who have done a ton in the open source community, and so. And as a listener of the podcast, it's really cool to be on the other end of the microphone here.
Well, trust me, you're fully cool. So it's great to have you
thank
here.
Thank you.
And we will
certified
have you
cool. Thank you.
Certified cool. I don't know if me certifying anybody as cool may not be that great. That's a great extinction, you might say. But anyway, so Jonathan, how is that for you, man?
I mean, he's a You know, people talk about kind of an X factor. It's hard to bottle that lightning, but he's got it. He's got something pretty special here.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's this idea that let's cut through the corporate speak and actually find a way to parse it down to the way the rest of us talk, or if it's just the kind of combination of data sources he's got, or, I mean, it's probably all of it. It's probably all of it and his own little twist that he's able to add to it. But it seems like there's something special about this project. TrueUp is kind of got the, it's got the lightning in the bottle right now. And I hope he finds a way to turn it into a permanent job for himself. Because I see this being a really good thing for kind of the open source community as a whole. You know, it's It seems like, and he's got it to some extent, but it seems like it would just be a killer app for this, for me to be able to say, I want to write source code for, you know, the Apache project. Type this in and find a business that's looking for someone to write that source code. If you could, yep. if you could connect that developer with that business that wants to pay him, make that connection and make that happen. It's just, it's a killer.
It's almost like I sort of see he's got supply and demand getting closer and closer to each other, and lightning can snap across it, right? And
yes,
and he's iterating his way toward that, right? And he's doing it as a solo flyer. I think it's a pretty amazing thing, actually. And also as a reporter, working for a magazine, which I did forever, I mean, always hungry for data, always hungry for that. We had the LJ Index, we called it, which we ran every month, and Netcraft always gave me stuff. I got stuff from, you know, lots of sources. I would be all over this, you know, if I was still doing that. But
yep.
we'll definitely have to have him back. So any plugs going on here that we can get to before we close?
Yeah, I've got my two things I regularly plug. First off is over on Hackaday.com. Watch for my stuff there. I run the security column. You get to hear stories about, well, things like the JavaScript libraries that we talked about briefly, and just all kinds of other things going on in the world of mostly computer security, but every once in a while we talk about other security things. And then the Untitled Linux Show, which is a Club Twit exclusive. And if you are not on Club Twit, you should be. It's only $7 a month, and there is now the option to pay for it yearly. Man, Club Twit is worth it. You can get everything ad-free, but you can also get things like the Untitled Linux Show and get to hang out with us there. So those are my two plugs.
Well, there's a lot there in the show, especially coming up for you. So thanks so much. And thanks, everybody. This has been a great show. And next week, oh, my gosh, I didn't check on that. So I don't know. I have to hurry and find the other tab that has next week on it. So it's an important thing. Next week, actually, the guest is, we'll have Jonathan again back, and he's on top of this, speaking of the Untitled Linux Show. Maybe we cover that in advance with Hector Martin of Asahi Linux. So that's the topic next week. And it's going to be an hour earlier because we're covering a big Google thing or something going on. But we're being moved to an hour earlier. So if you're on Pacific time, we're going to start about 8:30 Pacific time. So you can adjust your clocks. coordinate whatever way you would like. But anyway, but we're coming on an hour earlier next week only. So we will see you then.
If you are looking for a midweek update on the week's tech news, I got to tell you, you got to check out Tech News Weekly. See, it's all kind of built in there with the title. You get to learn about the news in tech that matters. Every Thursday, Jason Howell and I talk to the people making and breaking the tech news, get their insights and their interesting stories. It's a great show to check out. twit.tv/TNW.